Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. University of Tulsa Theater opens its season with a production of Little Shop of Horrors, running Thursday through Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2 at the Lorton Performing Arts Center on the University of Tulsa campus. Little Shop of Horrors is the first major success of the songwriting team of Alan Menken and Howard Ashman, who would go on to score some of the classic Disney animation films of the 1980s and early 1990s. Little Shop retells the story of the 1960 B-movie of the same name by Roger Corman, about a florist shop worker who raises a talking, and in this case, singing, alien plant that feeds on human blood. It's a funny, delightful musical, and of course it's performed around the world today. My guest today is TU Theater's guest director and choreographer, Gary John LaRosa. The New York professional has worked on over 200 productions of musicals, off-Broadway, major regional theaters, summer stock, and universities. He's the former director choreographer for the Montclair, New Jersey Musical Theater, and he specializes in staging the original Jerome Robbins choreography and direction for Fiddler on the Roof. He joins us today to talk about Little Shop of Horrors, which opens tonight at TU Theater. Gary John LaRosa, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. Nice to be here.
And welcome to Tulsa. This is your first time in Tulsa, and when I look at your extensive list of credits, I mean, there's multiple productions of most of the great musicals, but this is your very first Little Shop of Horrors.
It is. And I have to say, it was a show that I've always wanted to do. I saw the original production when it was off-Broadway in New York in the early 80s and was always a fan of the show. Traditionally, as a director, I tend to gravitate more to emotional pieces and pieces that are a little more sophisticated and cerebral. This is a piece which is just so damned entertaining that I think it's a crazy, wonderful little musical, and I really think it's well crafted despite the silly sort of plot line. So it was really a wonderful, you know, turn of events that I was actually asked to do it because I've always wanted to have a crack at it, and it's different for me.
Well, and this is the one thing about this show. You really shouldn't overthink it. It is sort of pure fantasy and fun.
Right. Well, you know, the funny thing about it is when you approach even something that's pretty straightforward, you still have to strive for a sort of stylistic approach to it. And, I mean, this show definitely has, I think, a stylistic approach because it's somewhat trying to recreate B-movies of the past, both horror movies and science fiction movies and that kind of thing. And the score, which is terrific, you know, is a wonderfully tuneful kind of contemporary rock score, I would say. But stylistically, I think the piece has a very unique kind of place that it needs to be. And so as a director, what you try and do is communicate with your cast what that is and to try and be consistent with it. The funny thing about Little Shop, not to digress, but it's a very small show. I mean, it's a cast of seven people that you see and then two others that are involved in the puppeteering. And it's basically a unit set show, which means that there's not a lot of multiple locations. But that being said, it's a very complicated show, technically, because uh-huh. You're dealing with this plant, which grows, and there's four different puppets that are used, one of which is over 10 feet tall. And you are trying to master the communication between the actor who's the voice of the puppet and the person who's actually working the puppet. So all of these elements, not to mention the finale of the show, which is sort of a separate kind of moment about the future of the world and what happens at the end of the story, have made this little show a quite complicated show.
Well, that's the whole thing. The story is straightforward, but it sounds like it's a technically difficult show.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that it could be produced on a simpler level, but we have tried to do several things with this production. One is to fill the stage of the Lorton Performance Center, which is a beautiful theater and a great facility, but it's a large space. And so if you put too small of a show in that space, it's going to get swallowed up. And I don't think it will communicate with the audience or reverberate the way you want it to. So one of the goals is to not create more for more's sake, but to sort of fill the space and to let the show work in that space. And in doing so, we've used projections and we've used a multi-level set. And I think it works well. It's just yeah, it becomes a lot more challenging than if you do it on a very small, simple scale.
Now, when you get a musical that you haven't done before, where do you start when thinking about the conception you want? Obviously, you have a creative team that's also involved, but
right.
But where do you begin? Does it go back to that first production you saw off Broadway?
Well, that's a good question because there's multiple things at play. Certainly, if you've seen something that's made an impression, it tends to stick with you to some degree. I mean, that production that I saw was, 20 plus years ago. So what you're dealing with is sort of a memory of what it was without the details. So that's a sort of stylistic memory that stays with you. But truthfully, I like to sort of start from scratch, which is, let me see what this piece is about. When you're doing different kinds of musicals, it can vary tremendously, but you kind of want to find out what the essence of the piece is. And if it's about a simple story, which is, needs to be entertaining and create sort of a B-movie feel, then you're going to say, how do I do this? And so, yes, you'll have the influence of what your faded memory is, but you can't reproduce something verbatim legally, first of all. Second of all, creatively, that wouldn't be terribly interesting. But more importantly, you have a whole set of parameters which are different in each show that you work on. And so you want to approach it with your designers in a way that will speak to the audience you're going to be performing for and take into consideration things like the performance space, the cast that you have, your personal artistic taste. And so you kind of want to make it your own. And that's what is exciting about what I do, at least for me. I really love my work because it gives me a chance to pretty much take a wonderful property and then make it my own. And I feel like when you just try, to reproduce something that's been done before, kind of takes the artistic wind out of it. So it becomes less interesting. It's just like any other job that you do the same thing over and over. But when you can bring your sort of own approach to it and communicate that with your company, it can be very exciting to create something new.
Now, when you first see the show, the thing that strikes you is everything is right up front. It is a big stage, as you mentioned, and it's a small show for the most part as far as people. Those people are really on top of the audience.
And, right. Well, that was absolutely a choice that I made. I think in big spaces, it is more challenging to communicate theatrically. And so one of the goals is how do you invest energy that will cross the stage line into the audience. And so by bringing the whole staging down and closer to the audience, it has a much more intimate feel to it. And I think that the audience will get the jokes more easily and faster, and that the energy of the piece will be more present. If you go to, the Metropolitan Opera and you have 1,000 people on stage and these giant sets, the spectacle of it is quite breathtaking. But sometimes when you're in that big of a space, the emotional core of it can be, missing. And the great opera singers, they're good at communicating long distance, which is what makes them great. But generally speaking, it's very difficult to get things to communicate over great distances. And so very simply bringing it closer to the audience and letting them feel more a part of it has great benefits.
Now, when you're casting a show, especially a show like this, you have the three singers who are sort of like the Greek
chorus.
The Greek chorus. And they're really, if people have seen the film but not the original production, they are a much larger role in telling this story.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the main principles. What are you looking for when you're casting?
Well, I guess the answer to that would be I don't know. And by that, I mean, of course, I know what the roles are and what the demands of the roles are, which is first and foremost in casting is you need to know what the challenges of the role are and make sure that the people can have the vocal ability to sing the notes that need to be sung, etc. But I always try to go into a casting process with a very open mind because, for one thing, I don't necessarily feel I have to do it the way it's always been done. I'm very big on non-traditional casting, which means that you try and be colorblind and you try and be gender blind sometimes. It's not like I do that intentionally to do it, but I'm open to it. And then most importantly is I like to find somebody that grabs me in an audition with their personality, their energy, and say, could that work for this character? So I'm much more intrigued by, you know, when I do very big casting calls in New York and maybe see 150 people in a day, the people that I will call back and that are most of interest to me are people that I feel have a spark or a real interesting look, or people that emotionally can very quickly, walking into a room, make an emotional connection to the material and or communicate that to the people at the table. So what I mean is, I don't know, is I like to see what shows up and then find the most interesting, talented people I can to fill the roles and to sort of think outside of the box a little bit in terms of not just saying this one has to be 5 foot tall and have brown hair.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I guess your association with the University of Tulsa began when you saw a bunch of TU students at I guess they went to New York for
a showcase.
Yeah, a showcase. And I assume you saw some sparks there?
Yeah. It was a very interesting story how I was hired for this. I must admit, I do a lot of work at universities as a guest director, and I really enjoy that because I love the energy and enthusiasm of people that are just on the cusp of a career in the theater. But I do, every spring, I work for a company called the Actors Connection. And basically what they do is set up universities. They sort of set up showcases for them where the students can come and perform for agents. And hopefully the goal is the student will graduate and come to New York and have an agent and have a little bit of an easier time making a foray into the crazy world of professional theater. And what I do that for the students is I actually coach them before they do their performance for the agents. And I work with them on their presentation and trying to give them confidence and help them to sort of really cut to the chase with the material they're performing. So I don't have a great deal of time to work with them, but I work with TU students, I believe it was 2 years ago, doing that very thing, and made a very nice connection with the faculty that was there. And ultimately, my name got around and they were looking for a guest director. And since they had seen me in action, I remember specifically Jim Gregory saying he really liked the way I interacted with the students. And rather than critiquing them in a negative or a destructive way, that I was extremely supportive and helping them to creatively improve their work, which is always the goal.
Yeah, and especially in a situation like that, it's probably the only thing route you can go is constructive.
Right.
You know, here's
right.
what you can add. Because
right. Yeah, there's not a great deal of time to change. If the material is going to be performed the next day or whatever, then they can't start from scratch. But I mean, as a director, one of the reasons I became a director is because I had worked professionally from Broadway to Las Vegas to shows internationally in South Africa, you name it. I've worked all over the globe, but I worked at a lot of directors I didn't really respect and I felt didn't treat the actors with a lot of respect or care. And I also felt that there were many that I worked with that I didn't think creatively were that interesting. And some were just not prepared. I mean, I've had a fairly long career in the theater professionally. So one of the reasons I started to direct, because I said, I think I can do this better. And one of the things I specifically wanted to do was to be able to treat people with grace and respect so that I think you get so much more from your actors when they feel supported and when they feel...
And they can trust you.
They can trust you. And when I work with celebrities, that's always the first thing that sort of happens is because they're celebrities, they tend to be a little more distrustful because there's more at stake for them, perhaps, in their mind. And so you have to establish that trust. And then once you have it, it can be terrific, you know, because some of these people are wonderful people that are fun to work with and have great talent. But the trust factor is major. And I think with students who are very vulnerable, it's really, really important to let them know that this guy from New York City who's coming is not a tyrant and he's not here to bring them down. And he's here to bolster them up and hopefully make them proud of the work they're doing.
Now, you do a lot of regional theater. You do a lot of summer stock at Muni, at Starlight up in Kansas City and around the country. Is there differences when working with student voices and student actors as opposed to these professionals, and how you approach things?
Yes and no. I think overall, I tend to approach every project and the way I treat people in the process pretty much the same, which is, as I was saying, you know, I try to be positive, create a real family atmosphere. Working on a show is basically creating a new family with every show. And so you want to make people feel supported and feel like they are proud of the work they're doing. And so if you create that atmosphere from the get-go, usually throughout the whole process, there's very few problems, because if problems arise, people are trained to solve the issues without temper and without histrionics and that kind of thing. So that's the first thing, is I pretty much approach every, you know, whether they're students or professionals, they get treated the same way. But the other side of that is there's no question that students are less experienced. Students may be more vulnerable and wanting to please, in which case they're not necessarily thinking about how they can improve the work, because they want to impress or please you. And so what I try and do is strip them of that and say, you will please me if you do the work well and approach it professionally by saying, what is it we're trying to achieve here? If your voice is not as strong, then there are other things we can bring out that will make the material work equally well, because we all know there are many well-known performers that may not have great voices.
Yeah, Rex Harrison yeah, exactly. Didn't really sing up a storm.
And yet he's iconic in My Fair Lady, and for good reason, because he was wonderful. But that's exactly the point, is you want to help them realize that every student has something unique and wonderful to offer, and how do you bring that out and let them shine is really the challenge, and to let them know that they don't need to please me. They need to really please themselves and know that they shouldn't be watching their performances or judging them, because if you're doing that, then you're really not acting. So long story short is I just try and let them approach the work from a technical standpoint, which is to say, what is this scene about and what are my goals in this scene, and make connections with the other actors, true, honest connections. And even in a show like Little Shop of Horrors, it's very important that you believe the relationship between Seymour and Audrey. And it's not a caricature, and it's not sort of going through the motions, that there's an honest, heartfelt, believable secret love there. And when that happens, I think the rewards for an audience is so much greater. And the audience may not be aware of all the sort of technical aspect of this, but when you love a show and have a great time at a show, it's because there are great connections being made. And whether it's comedically or vocally or otherwise, it's all about the human connection.
My guest today is Gary John LaRosa, a guest director and choreographer based in New York. He is directing and choreographing University of Tulsa Theater's production of Little Shop of Horrors, which runs Thursday through Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2 at the Lorton Performing Arts Center on the TU campus. Well, again, getting back to the fact this is the first Little Shop, you've got the puppetry element, but you've got a great cast. What has impressed you most about the people who are doing these roles?
It's a very talented group and a diverse group. As you said, there's this Greek chorus in the show, which is really not a Greek chorus, but they sort of function in the way that is. These are three street urchins that the show takes place, as you know, in Skid Row and the Lower East Side of New York, theoretically. And so these are three gals that sometimes function as characters in the play and sometimes comment on the action and tell the story of the play. And so the requirements of that are three really great voices that can blend and have some really tough singing to do and some really fun, wonderful singing to do, and dialogue as well. And so the three gals that we have are, I think, terrific, because they're very different from each other. They all have a very unique look and sensibility from each other, but they work terrifically as a unit. And that's very important, because that element of the show is sort of the glue between the scenes, and they have to be fun and they have to really knock the audience off their seats with their energy, enthusiasm, and all that. So we're very fortunate to have Elena and Grace and Christina. Then we have the sort of comedic character. One of the joys of Little Shop is you've got your main principals, and then one principal character. I guess it's not giving anything away to say he gets eaten by the plant. I think most people are familiar enough with Little Shop. But that character, after he's gone, this actor plays a total of 8 different roles. And part of the fun is seeing this actor, particularly in the second act, come back. And every time he enters, he's a different person, including one woman. And so it's a lot of fun for this actor to sort of be a chameleon in all these different scenes. And Sean Rooney is terrific in that role of the dentist who also plays these other characters. And then my leads, which are Audrey Seymour and Mr. Mushnick, are terrific as well. And they're all very different. Adam, who plays Mr. Mushnick, has a more mature sensibility, and this is an older character role. So for a student to play the role, it's always a little more challenging, but he had a real sort of sense and understanding of who this character was, which is sort of a cranky Lower East Side florist whose business is lousy and lets everybody know it. And then Seymour and Audrey are the sort of protagonists of the show, and Audrey has to be a very sweet and vulnerable character who Seymour secretly loves, and Caitlin Rudd.
Yeah.
What were you?
I was going to say, who can sing like a church mouse and then all of a sudden belt, too.
Right. And we were very fortunate. Caitlin Rudd, I think, had a really good, fun take on who the character was, but also was, you know, had the talent to pull all the other elements off as well. And so we were very lucky to get her. And Seymour, who really is the lead in the show, and the whole thing revolves around him. Michael Hunt is terrific. He is, I think, a smart actor. He's got a lovely voice. And talking about what you were saying earlier, one of the things that's exciting about working with them is they are so eager to learn everything they can and to try to give you the best performance possible. Once, again, you have their trust, then they just really, really want the piece to succeed and to feel like they have given you what you've asked for. And I think everybody across the board has worked incredibly hard to make the show what it is. And you know, Michael, I know, has really, really put so much time and energy into his role. But, I mean, everybody has. But I'm impressed with his... Some of the things he would say, I'm not sure I can do this. And I said, we will do this, and I'll show you how you're going to build up to doing this. And I think he impressed himself. And I think that's what's so exciting about my job, is to make the students realize that they are capable of more sometimes than they even think they are. And I'd be reticent not to mention the plant. The two people that we have working the plant, the voice of the plant, Thomas Porter, he's funny and terrific and just... has a great comedic sense, very entertaining to listen to him. And Rachel, who is the operator of the plant, traditionally this is usually a big strapping man because the last plant is very
huge,
challenging to operate. It's heavy, it's big. And she had an interest in puppetry, and we're so glad that she has done this because she's really taken time and energy to master what is a very arduous task. And I think she's done it really well. And then the two of the actors, Rachel and Thomas, have to work together to make their performances meld, because one is physical and one is vocal, and they need to work together to be believable. And they've done a great job of that.
My guest today is Gary John LaRosa, a guest director and choreographer for TU's production of Little Shop of Horrors, which runs Thursday through Sunday at the Lorton Performing Arts Center. When I look over your resume, the one show that sticks out is Fiddler on the Roof. You've done at least 12 productions that I know of, perhaps more.
Yeah,
it's
over 20.
And everything from national touring companies to stock to regional theater. You obviously have a great affinity for this show, and one of the things you do is you teach the Jerome Robbins choreography, which is, that's what makes the show.
Right.
One of the things that makes the show. It's a great show of humor and sadness and emotion. But it's also the great dancing that's a part of this.
Well,
show.
You know, Jerry Robbins was unique when he was creating his theater. It was a very interesting time in musical theater because dance was suddenly being used for the first time to tell the story, as opposed to just being dancing girls that were fun to watch and look at. And with his shows like West Side Story and Fiddler on the Roof and The King and I, he created wonderful pieces that integrated the dance into the story and used it in a beautiful, evocative way. And so my history with Fiddler goes way, way back, in the sense that when I was in my performing days, I did the show on Broadway with Topol, and then I did a national touring company with Theater Bekel, and I did a production in German, which I learned phonetically in Austria and Germany. But the point is, I learned the choreography for the show from basically Jerry's first assistant. And so I kind of learned it from the horse's mouth, because this man was responsible for doing every major production that happened, even while Jerry was alive, because he never really wanted to do it again. He wanted to move on to other things. It was done, and his
next case.
Yeah. So the point is, I learned the choreography, and it's not just steps. In Fiddler, you're again telling the story, and there's so much involved. There's the Chava ballet, which is brief, but tells at a moment of crisis for Tevye. He's remembering his young daughters, and it's sort of tells the story of how each of them has grown up and left him for the suitor or husband that they end up with. And you have the wedding dances, which are just unbelievably exciting and thrilling, with the bottle dance, etc. And you have the dream, which is, incredibly humorous. And you have tradition, which is, sort of frames the whole show. So there's all this wonderful choreography that helps to tell the story of Tevye and his family and Anna Tevka. And I was fortunate to learn it from the right people. And, people often say to me, don't you get tired of doing the same show? And obviously, in the course of a year, I may do, 8 to 12 productions of various shows or pieces, but almost every year I do a Fiddler, and I don't get tired of it, because you're always working with new people and you're exposing new people to what I think is one of the greatest musicals of all time. And when you have new actors, new designers, a new theater, new audiences, you're doing something new, even though you've done it before. And what could be better than having a show, the legacy of a show like that, where you're, I'm proud of the show and what it stands for, and how the longevity of the show and how it's touched so many people over the decades. It makes me really, really happy that I can pass this on to future generations, as opposed to, if I was just doing a show that didn't really matter to me very much, then it would feel a lot more repetitive and redundant. But yeah, so over the course of my career, I have played multiple roles in the show. I've done it in multiple languages. I've directed it. I've choreographed it. I've directed and choreographed it. And I've directed and choreographed it and performed in it at the same time. So it's been a long haul, but it's really wonderful. And I had the opportunity to meet all the creators at various points in my career, which was really great.
Gary John, thanks very much for joining us.
Rich, thank you.
Gary John LaRosa is the guest director and choreographer for TU Theater's production of Little Shop of Horrors, which runs tonight through Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2 at the Lorton Performing Arts Center on the TU campus. For ticket information, call 918-631-2567. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.